Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Pei Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 8 lines from the top. At the end of our previous shiur, the Gemara mentioned that the children of the poor are ones from whom one could expect Torah knowledge to emanate. In other words, the children of the poor, being that they are of a humble spirit, and hence would not be arrogant with regard to others, are likely candidates to be successful in their pursuit of Torah knowledge. Picking up from that theme, we have another comment in the same vein. The Gemara begins, "Umipnei ma ein mitzuyin tamidei chachomim lotzeis tamidei chachomim mibneim." An interesting phenomenon. Why is it that it's not common for Torah scholars to have children that themselves are Torah scholars? The Gemara, as you can see in the markings, features a triangle shape, a series marking, and on the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, the Nosei is the topic heading Mivneh, the structural note, you see a triangle, and it indicates Ta'amim, a series of reasons, Lahasbir, to explain, Mipnei Ma'ein Mitzuyin Tamidei Chachamim, Lotzeis Tamidei Chachamim Mibneim. So, we are now about to see answers to this interesting question. Omar Rav Yosef, Shelo Yomru, Torah Yerusha Hi Lohem. So that the general public won't come to the conclusion that the Torah is an inheritance. That if your father was learned, then you have a chance of becoming learned. Otherwise, no chance. We look in the Ran. Yerusha hi lohem, lo yilmedu Torah, others, the masses won't learn Torah, me'achar shem somchin, because they are figuring, they're relying on an erroneous principle, Yerusha hi lohem, that he who became Torah proficient inherited that from his forebears. So with that in mind, the Almighty has arranged it that people who are themselves Torah scholars won't often find their children being thus as well. The Gemara continues, Rav Sheshes Brei Deravidi, other Girsos, other versions have Rav Shisha Brei Deravidi, Omer Kedei Shelo Yisgadru Al Hatzibor. Rashi says, Shelo Yisgadru, Shelo Yisgadlu, so that they should not be arrogant over the public. Shelo Yin Agu Sroro Kishiyiru Sheheim Vavoisa Muvneim Tamidei Chachomim. People will find themselves behaving arrogantly when their fathers were Torah scholars, where they themselves are Torah scholars, where their children are Torah scholars. It becomes a type of exclusive club of individuals, and with that, people tend to behave arrogantly. So to avoid that, we have this phenomenon that it's not common for Talmidei Chachamim to produce children that are themselves Talmidei Chachamim. Mar Zutra Omer, Nidnei Shein Misgadrin, or another gear says, Misgadrin Al Hatzibor. Here, there's a slight difference between what Rav Shisha Brei Rav Idi said and Mar Zutra, and you can see this in Rashi, Nidnei Shein Misgadrin Devadai. It's with certainty in Rav Mar Zutra's opinion that call me shutam l'chochem, no tam l'chochem, vaday mezgaber. Not just a matter of, we'll say, fear or a raised possibility, but rather with certainty, those who are themselves Torah scholars and their children are thusly, they will be arrogant. The Gemara continues, Rav Ashi Omer Mipnei Dekoru Le'inshi Chamri. Rashi says, Dekoru Le'inshi Chamri She'enu Agim Lohen Kovodu Mevazen Osan Mipnei Torah Shebahem. As a type of, we'll say, seeming punishment, there are Torah scholars, because of their Torah scholarship, they tend to look down and behave in a dismissive fashion regarding others, because of the Torah that's within them. It's a somewhat unfortunate situation that, what, like in the case of alcohol, some people don't know how to hold their alcohol. Some people don't know how to hold their Torah. When Torah is supposed to, improve one's behavior, there seems to be another force, a Yetzirah, an evil inclination that drives people to behave this way. The Gemara in Sukkah says, "Kol agodol mechavero," he who is greater than his fellow in Torah scholarship, Yitzro godol menu, his evil inclination is also greater. So as a result of embarrassing or belittling others, they therefore do not merit having their own children be Talmidei Chachamim. Ravina Omer She'ein Mevorchin B'Torah Tchila. As a result of their familiarity and their commonness with Torah, that they're always engaged in Torah study, they forget, so to speak, they don't take seriously the requirement of saying the brachos, the benedictions, that one is required to say before Torah study. The Birchas HaTorah have within them the prayer that they and their children and their grandchildren, their descendants, should all be Torah scholars. So if you're not saying the bracha, so then you're not going to merit that which the bracha affords, namely having children that are also scholars. The Gemara continues, the Amar of Yehuda Amarav, and this is a long point, and you can see we've marked it off thusly. My dichtiv, we want to understand the pasuk in Yirmiyo that says, Mi o yishe chacham v'yovein ezois. There's a fuller quote of the pasuk that we have included on the side. This was by Yirmiyo Perek Tes Pasuk Yud Aleph, followed by Pasuk Yud Beis that we've written on the side, which says, reading the entire Pesukim, Mi o yishe chacham v'yovein ezos, who is the man of wisdom and can understand this, Vasher diber pi Hashem elov yagidu almo ovda oretz, Nitzisa kemidbar mibli over. The question that people ask is, for what reason was the land of Israel destroyed, becoming like a desert without any passers by. Vayomer Hashem alozum es terosi asher nasati lifneim v'lo shomu b'koli v'lo holchu ba. Hashem answers, it's as a result of their abandoning my Torah that I gave them and not heeding my words nor following its teachings. We've read the Pesukim and now we look at the Gemara's analysis. The Pesuk quote that we read so far was Mi o yishe chacham v'yovein ezos. Dovar zeh, this question, the question of Alma avda oretz, what was responsible for the land of Israel being destroyed, this matter, Nishal l'chachamim u'l'neviim v'lo pirshuhu. It was presented to the prophets, to the wise men, and they did not explain it. The Ran says, Dovar zeh nishal hachacham v'lo pirshu, b'nichtiv ayomer Hashem al ozem ez torasi, mechlal, deleka diyoda l'aduri taima, elokut shebricham. The fact that the Pesuk went on to say in Pesuk Yud Beis that God answered the question, it seems that no one else was able to answer the question except for him, for the Almighty himself. Motzasin el starim shel Rabbeinu, dekro achidayek, da'al shelo berchu b'torah tchila av d'horetz. The Rabbeinu Yonah, in a private writing, explains that it was concluded that the land was destroyed because of their not making the Brichas HaTorah, which the Gemara will go on to say, the Im Iso Al Osam Es Torah Kipashto, if you were to think to read the Pasuk and accept it at face value because they abandoned Torah learning, well, Mashma Shosros HaTorah V'Yoyiskin Bog, it would appear that they stopped learning Torah altogether. Well, then, if that were the case, Kishin Ishal Chachom Vim, when the question was posed to the wise men and to the prophets, Lama Lo Pirshu, why couldn't they explain that? If you're asking why was the land destroyed, because people abandoned Torah study. Follow the Vergoli, Hoyav Kalifarish. It's an obvious thing. It's easy to explain. Ela Vaday Oiskin Hoyu B'Torah Tomim. Rather, in that generation, there was constant Torah study. Ulefika Hayu Chachomim Unavim Tmeim Al Malvdoritz. And as a result of that, the wise men and the prophets were amazed. How could it be? Had a society full of Torah study, and yet the Almighty destroyed the land? So, Ad Shepisha Kodesh Baruch Hu Be'atzmu Shiyodeh Mim Kehalev Shodim Mevorchim B'Torah Tchila Klomar. And this is what the Rabbeinu Yonah explains. What does it mean that they didn't say a bracha on the Torah beforehand? Shelo Hoysa Torah Chashuva B'nehem. Yes, it was a society of people who were learning and studying Torah, but not that the Torah was very... was sufficiently important to them. Shehei roi levorech alah, something that is significant, so it's fit to have a benediction recited beforehand. Shelohi oisken balishma, they weren't engaged in Torah study for its own sake, for the sake of fulfilling the will of Hashem. They were involved in Torah study for other reasons that were motivated by non-altruistic causes. And umitoch kach hoyu mezalzel b'chosa, and therefore they took the bracha very lightly. V'hainu lo holchu b'klomer b'kavonos l'shma. They didn't follow the Torah with proper intent and with proper lofty intention. Eilu divrei harav v'chosid zal. The Rabbeinu Nissim, the Ran, says that up till now, this has been the explanation offered by the very pious Rabbeinu Yonah. This explanation is fit and proper coming from a man like the pious Rabbeinu Yonah. In other words, the explanation of abandonment of Torah in terms of lack of proper intent, kavona, is something that someone who himself is capable, is a practitioner of that, would readily understand. Now we go back to the Gemara and see the points that some of the points that we saw in the Ran. We'll go back and see it at their source. So the Gemara had told us that when the question of why was the land destroyed was presented to the Chachamim Nevi'im, and they couldn't explain it until the Almighty explained it, as the Pasuk says, Vayomer Hashem al Ozvom es Torasi. And it goes on to say, "V'lo shamu b'kayli v'lo hol chuba." So the Gemara asks, "Is there not redundancy in this pasuk? Hainu lo shamu b'kayli, hainu lo hol chuba." They're to say that they didn't listen, they didn't heed the words of Hashem, they didn't listen to His voice, and they didn't walk in His ways. Are they not essentially the same thing? Omar v'yira marav loymar. The extra expression in the pasuk comes to tell me, not only did they not follow His ways, but also she'ein mevorchim b'Torah tchila. They didn't say a bracha before the study of Torah. And we, just to remind ourselves, we explain what Rashi pointed out, that is also an explanation as to why the children of Talmid Chachamim don't turn out themselves to be Talmid Chachamim. Because in the text of the bracha it says, Nia anachnu v'tzetzeinu, we and our descendants should be Torah scholars. And if you don't say that, if you don't say that in the bracha, if you don't ask for it as the bracha text indicates, so don't expect to receive it. We have a long marking, we call this a Meisen incident. Isi bar Yehuda lo osu le misifta de Rabbi Yosi tlosa yoimi. Isi did not appear in the yeshiva, in the Torah study center of Rabbi Yosi, 3 days. Ashkechei vardimus Rabbi Yosi. Vardimus is the name of Rabbi Yossi's son. Vardimus met Isi Bar Yehuda. Why haven't you come to my father's base medrash for 3 days? So Isi explains, because your father's teachings, I don't understand. How are they to be? How are they to be explained? So Vardimus says, Lema mor, my ka'omale, you tell me something that my father said, Dilma yodana tame, maybe I can offer you an explanation. Omale, so Isi answers, Ha desanya, we have the following teaching. This is a source that we saw at the quoted from Pei Omid Beis. We have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text. You can align this with an arrow back on Pei Omid Beis, and you'll see where this is a quote from. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi said, Kvisosan kevin l'chaya cherem. Rabbi Yossi, in the topic that we had dealt with in our previous year, it's a question of a limited water supply, and the local community from which the water stream emanates has enough water for their drinking purposes, but if they were to share the water with a town downstream for their drinking purposes, so the original town won't have enough water for their clothes washing, for washing their clothes. Rabbi Yossi presents a somewhat surprising ruling, and he says that the town from which the stream emanates, their clothing washing preempts the drinking needs of the community downstream. Kromenolon, what pasuk could possibly serve as a source for that teaching of Rabbi Yossi? Amarle, so Vardimus answers Dichtiv, and note we have a long answer marking. He quotes a pasuk, and the pasuk deals with the cities that were given to the tribe of Levi. Even though the tribe of Levi did not receive land apportionments like the rest of the tribes, they nevertheless received a number of cities, 48 cities in the land of Israel, with the surrounding area. The surrounding area is what is of interest to the Pasuk now, and it says, Umigrushayim yu levehemton ulurichusham uluchol chiyusam. The Migrushayim of the surrounding areas of these cities will be for their animals, for their possessions, and for all their life's needs. My chayosam. The Pasuk says, uluchol chayosam, what does that mean? Hilemo chaya. If you were to take it to mean it, to mean that the surrounding areas of the Levite cities will be for their chayas. The chayas are undomesticated, kosher variety animals. Let's say for their deer. Well, I don't need the pasuk to say that. V'halo chaya b'chlal behemahi. It's a known fact that in terms of references to animals in psukim, that when the pasuk makes reference to behemah, that includes within it chaya. Generally speaking, behemah is translated as domesticated kosher variety animals, unless otherwise stated. However, if the pasuk uses the word behemton, it can very well, as is the case here, include chayas. So the term behemton already appears. So what does chayosam mean? Elamai chayosam chiyusam amish. So what do you want to say? It means for their own personal life needs? Well, pshita, that's obvious. It's obvious that the surrounding areas of these Levite cities would be to serve their essential life needs. Elolav kvisa. Rather, it must be revealing something beyond that which is obvious. So it's referring to the need of washing clothing. And the pasuk calls washing of clothing chayosam da ikot tsar de bruvisa, without the washing of clothing. So you have the problem of the pain of irbuvisa, which was featured at the upper part of this omid, and we mentioned at that point that clothing left unwashed but yet worn lead to a person losing his mind. And the loss of mind is an essential element for life support, that one has his own mind about him. And that's why Rabbi Yossi says that the kvisa, the washing, the clothing washing needs of the local community from which the stream emanates, preempts the drinking needs of the community downstream. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading, which reads, Rechitza v'kishut, Rabbi Yossi, bathing and cosmetics, according to Rabbi Yossi, Enom Inui Nefesh. The woman who, let us say, vows not to bathe nor to adorn herself, according to Rabbi Yossi, it's not a vow that one would categorize as inui nefesh, the type of vows that a husband can annul. Mao shiofer mishum dvorem shebeino leveino. Can the husband nevertheless annul the vows on the grounds that they are called matters that affect the couple, that affect the husband upon her making the vow? And we have learned that that is another category of vow that a husband is entitled to annul. There is a difference, though. We've learned earlier in the Masechta, earlier in the Perek, that vows that are of an inui nefesh characteristic, when the husband annuls the vow, they are annulled permanently, not only with regard to them as a couple, but with regard to her contact with all other people as well. Vows that are categorized as beino leveino, there's a different standard, where if the husband annuls that kind of vow, so it's annulled with regard to his connection with the woman, with his wife, but if she were to become divorced or widowed, the vow will, we'll say, resurface, and it's therefore not totally annulled in that sense. So, the Gemara. Omar Rav Yossi, Ein Elu Nidre Inui Nefesh. A quote from the Mishnah that Rechitza and Kishut are not categorized as Inui Nefesh. Ibai Eloho. The Gemara asks, the Rav Yossi, Mao Shiofer Mishum Dvorim Shebeinoi Leveino. According to Rav Yossi, can he annul the wife's vows if she vows not to bathe or not to adorn herself on the grounds that that is something that would interfere with their living, with their domestic existence, their living together as a couple? Toshma, Omar Rabbi Yossi, Ein Elu Nidre Inui Nefesh. The Mishnah said that Kishut and Rechitza are not Inui Nefesh. That leaves ample room to infer Avol Dvorim Shebeino Leveino Havyon. But they do fall into the category of Beino Leveino. And the Ran explains, if it were so, according to Rabbi Yossi, that they are not even Beino Leveino, then the Mishnah should have said, should have read that Rabbi Yossi says, Lo Yofer, he cannot annul the vows. The fact that it was explained in the Mishnah by Rabbi Yossi saying that these are not Inui Nefesh, it leaves room to infer, but they are Beino Leveino. The Gemara continues with it rejects this proof and says, Dilma lididhu ka'amar lahu. Maybe Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah wasn't a reflection of his own opinion, but he was addressing the Chachomim, the first opinion, and saying to them thusly, lididi, as far as my personal shita, my personal position is concerned, afilu devarim shebeino leveino lo havyon, that even matters of a domestic nature, the issue of non-bathing and non-cosmetics doesn't arise. Lididhu, damrisa havyon nidrinu nefesh, according to you that go the other extreme and say that they are even inui nefesh, then odu li, you should at least concede to me, dien elu nidre inui nefesh. That what your position is too extreme. They're not inui nefesh. It's not a function of something that will cause her personal pain. So at this point in the Gemara, we thought that we had an answer regarding Rabbi Yossi and the categorization of Rechitza and Kishut as yes being Beino Leveino. The Gemara though rejected that. So here we ask, my. What do we? How should we rule? How should we conclude this question, this issue? The Rashi at the bottom line says, "My klomar akati mi bayalon." The question remains: Imei for ilo? Does the husband have, at least according to Rabbi Yossi, does the husband have any jurisdiction over these vows or not? So, number one, Rav Ado bar Avo Omer Mefer, Rav Huna Omer Ein Mefer, and he explains why the husband cannot mefer, why, according to Rav Huna, the issue of Kishut and Rechitza are not even Beino Leveino. Shelomotzinu Shuol Shemeis Ba'afar Pir. We can offer a literal translation, but it's not very significant. Rav Huna says it's on the grounds, and we've never found a fox dying as a result of the dirt in its own hole. For our purposes, it means this husband and wife are regular with one another. He'll be able to conduct, intimate relations with her, even if she doesn't engage in the kishut. Amongst the different aspects of kishut, and you can see this in the Ran commentary, the kishut also involved, combing or tending to hairs on a woman's body, including the area of intimacy, and if they're not cared for, so it could lead to entanglement and could conceivably cause pain to the husband. Yet Rav Huna feels, and in his explanation, he's saying that don't worry about that when it comes to a husband and wife. When a person is regular, he knows how to conduct himself, and that those se'oros, those hairs, will not injure him. Tanyo kavose d'Rav Ado bar Avo. We have a Tanaic source supporting Rav Ado bar Avo. Note that this is a very long point, practically half. It's more than half the Omid of Gemara to develop the point. So we have a Tanaic source supporting Rav Ado, who explained in the name of Rabbi Yossi that Kishut and Rechitza fall into the realm of Beino Leveino. We're going to have a long Tanaic source. As you can see, it's marked with a frame. There's a lot of other markings here. At the end of this Tanaic source, which has no name in it, but we're interested in assuming, or at least concluding, that it's Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara, after the Tanaic source, you can see, says, Man shaminon diyomar shaloeko v'shalefkois dvorim shebeino leveino havyon. Who is it that categorizes these activities as beino leveino? It can only be Rabbi Yossi, the Gemara says, because according to the Rabbanon, shaloeko v'shalefkois, which are expressions of kishut, would be inui nefesh. And yet in this source, it describes shaloeko v'shalefkois as Beino Leveino. It can't be the Rabbanon, it's therefore Rabbi Yossi. And in this source we will see that the husband is able to mefer, he's able to annul those vows. That is what Rav Ado bar Avo had said. So now let's see the entire source. We have a structural note on the side. Roman numerals will appear 1 through 4. Arba Kvusa Shanadar, 4 different groups of vows. And the double underline highlights maskonus im umosa yochol lahofer. Each category of vowel has to, we have to reach a conclusion regarding each category of vowel. Does it lend itself to husband annulment? Does he have jurisdiction over it or not? The brisa. Dvorim, sheyesh ben inui nefesh, mefer. Those types of vows that a wife might take that would, that if upheld, would lead to her experiencing pain, deprivation, suffering. So the husband, mefer, is able to annul them. Bein, beino leveino, bein, beino leveino cherim. His annulment is effective, not only between himself and her, meaning all the time that she's married him, but the annulment is binding, is effective, even if she is divorced from him or is widowed and she ends up marrying someone else. That vow that's categorized as inui nefesh will not have any effect. She'ein bohem inui nefesh, those vows that are not inui nefesh, beino levein amefer, beino levein achir eino mefer. The annulment of a vow that's not inui nefesh, that doesn't result in her pain if upheld, the husband, upon annulling it, it's annulled as long as she's married to the husband. But if she is no longer married to the husband for whatever reason, the vow resurfaces. Ketzad. Here the Gemara is asking regarding what is an example of inui nefesh. And this you can see in Rashi, across from Ketzad, Ezu Nidra inui nefesh, Yud Muforim La'ulum. And here we go. Omra Kainam Peros Alai. Woman says she prohibits fruits upon herself, using the konam expression, meaning for our purposes she vows to abstain from fruits. Hare ze yofer, the husband can annul, and as we said before, the annulment will be effective not only while she's married to him but even afterwards. A second category of vow, konam she'eni oise l'pi abo, she vows not to do things for her father, lefi achicha, for your brother, lefi avicha, for your father, lefi achi, for my brother, v'shelo etein tevin lefi behem, lefnei behemtecha, she vows not to feed animals with a tevin, with straw, umayim lefnei bekarcha, and she vows not to serve water to his cattle. Ein yochol lahafer. Those kind of vows, they're not inui nefesh, and they're not beino leveino. So, he, the husband, cannot annul them. V'shelo echol, a third category of vow. V'shelo echol v'shel efkos. V'shelo shamish mitasi. She vows not to, echol and efkos are different forms of cosmetics that a woman would apply. She vows not to do that, and not to engage in intimacy. Yofer mishum dvorim shebeino leveino. And here we've, in addition to the double underlining, we've also dashed underline, because this is really what we need our attention drawn to. Number four, fourth category, shelo atzia loch mitascha. She vows not to prepare his bedding. She vows not to serve him beverages, serve him wine. She vows not to wash her husband's face, arms, or legs. Those kind of vows ain't sorich lahafir. He doesn't even need to annul them. They don't get off the ground. These are activities that a wife is obligated to perform, to provide for her husband. Rabban Gamliel Omer Yofer, Gamliel disagrees and says that the husband should annul them. Shenemar lo yachel devoroi. The pasuk says that one shall not violate their vows, one's own vows. The Tosfos commentary says that even though she is in fact duty bound for providing these things, it needs, on a rabbinic level, it needs to be annulled so that she doesn't treat vows lightly. And one who treats vows lightly eventually will come to violate actual vows that do take hold, that are binding, and then they'll be in violation of the pasuk, which says, Lo yachel dvor, thou shalt not violate your words. Dovar Acher, another approach to this pasuk, lo yachel dvoro mikan l'chocham shein matir nidrei atzmo. The pasuk says, you shall not annul your own words, your own vows. So from here, we learn that a chocham, a Torah sage, who is licensed to annul other people's vows, but his own vows, he cannot annul. And conclusion is as a result of the grammar found in the pasuk of Lo Yachel Dvaro. You cannot undo your own words. Someone else would have to undo the Chacham's own vows. Man Shaminon Diomar Shalo Echo Vishalevka is equals Dvarm Shabeno Leveno Havyon. We have a little arrow to the immediate left hand side of the Gemara text. You can see this is a quote from above, where you see the corresponding arrow. Who is the Tana that would say that the abstention from cosmetics is considered in the realm of Beino Leveino? Rabbi Yossi. And we pointed out before, it's according to the Rabbonon, Shelo es kashet, it has to do with adornments and cosmetics, of which Echol and Efkos are subcategories. Would that would be considered inui nefesh? But this Tanaic source, this nameless Tanaic source, categorizes Shel Echol and Shel Efkos as Beino Leveino. Who would say that? That's Rabbi Yossi. Vikotani de Mefer Mishum Devarm Shebeino Leveino. And the source teaches that the husband is entitled to annul that those kind of vows on the grounds of there being Beino Leveino, as Rav Ado Bar Ava had taught. Omar Mar. And here we have a quote from above. Again, we have a reference marking the little star that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align it, and you see where this comes from. On that line above, it said, now, when we read the source, we didn't explain. We translated, the woman had vowed not to engage in intimacy, and the source says he should annul that, or he has the right to annul it on the grounds of Beino Leveino. On the side of our Gemara, we have an Osei topic heading, which introduces this section of Gemara. Be'ezel loshen hi noideres, b'inyintash shamita sholov ne'emar yofer. What is the actual language of her vow, the text of her vow, that she uses in regard to non-intimacy? The Gemara continues. Heichi domi. Ilei mod yomro hanoas tashmishi olecho. If you were to think that the wife vowed that the pleasure that my intimacy provides to you should be forbidden, loma li hafara, why is there any need for annulment? Ha mishubetisle, she is duty bound. It's a wife's obligation toward her husband to provide him with this particular act, which will result in his enjoying it. She has no right to prevent him from that. Ella, so what must have been the text of her vow? Be'emeris, she said, and note, this is a long answer, she says, Hanoas tashmishcho olai, uchid rav kahana. She vows, regarding herself, not to benefit from, not to have pleasure, or to abstain from the pleasure that intimacy with her husband would provide her. And this is a binding vow based on Rav Kahana's teaching of Rav Kahana. Hanoas tashmishi olecha, a woman who tries to prevent her husband through a vow from benefiting from her intimacy. Koifo mishamoshta, we force her to engage in intimacy. She has no right to prohibit her husband from benefiting from the intimacy. However, hanoas tashmishcho olai yofer, the woman who accepts on herself a restriction to abstain from enjoying the intimacy, yofer, the husband is to annul that. She'ein machilin es odom dover osu lo. Because otherwise, the husband will be engaging with her in intimacy, and she will be in violation of a self-imposed restriction. It would be, in effect, feeding someone something that is prohibited to them. So that's Rav Kahana's explanation, or based on Rav Kahana's explanation, we understand why a woman who vows not to benefit from the, not to benefit, not to enjoy the intimacy with her husband, in order to save her from of violating her vow, the husband is to annul that neder. Man tano ha desanyo. Who would be the author of the following nameless Tanaic source? What does it say? Dvorim hamutorim, things that are allowed. V'achirim noagu bohen isur, and people, others have accepted upon themselves restriction. I atorah shoy linhoig bohem heter kidei levatlon. You are not to be light with them, to attempt to allow those things which would result in their violating that which they accepted on themselves. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Actually, maybe before we look at the Rashi, there's a text edition that we have it written between the lines. Of course, you can see this is taken from the Bach. So, Moni, who is the author of that? Rabban Gamliel he. This would be in accordance with Rabban Gamliel. Desanyo, Rabban Gamliel Omer Yofer. Use your arrow that you see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, align it with the arrow above, also to the right-hand side, and you see that Rabban Gamliel's opinion regarding the vow of not making the bed and not serving the drink, that the husband should annul that anyway. So that Rabban Gamliel says that needs to be annulled, as opposed to the Tanakama that said the vow doesn't even get off the ground. So now we take a look at the Rashi commentary. Dvarim mutarim v'achirim shenag bo isriyata rashoi linhuig v'chulei moni Rabban Gamliel he. D'yomar liel yofer law above, Rabban Gamliel had ruled regarding the vow not to serve the beverage, not to make the beds, etc., that the husband should annul that. Hayo v'nuaga bo isur. Since she accepted upon herself a restriction from those activities, v'isvura sh'tei asura l'tzia lo'i mitasim zoikais, and she thinks, it may be erroneous, but she thinks that it's forbidden for her to make the bed and to serve the drink. The husband, according to Rabban Gamliel, has no right to allow life to continue on as if nothing happened without his annulling that vow. So the concept that you see in this source of things that are essentially mutter, they're not prohibited, but people accepted on themselves restriction, that you have no right to treat them lightly, and hence the need in our case for annulment. We continue in the Gemara. Mishum shenemar lo yachel devoro. Dovor acher lo yachel devoro mikan l'tamud chocham she'ein mefer nidre atzmo. This, of course, is all a continuation of the source that we saw above with the different categories of vows following Rabban Gamliel's teaching of the need for the annulment of a vow that you would have thought doesn't even get started. As you can see, the slash mark indicates that which follows is a new trend of thought. We introduce the Gemara with a Nosei Mivne heading. As you look in the actual text, you can see we've used a number of triangles that appear in alternating directions. This is a Ma'akav, as we've written on the side, with the triangle point facing upwards. They represent She'ela or Dechia, a question or a rejection of a tshuva, of an answer. You'll see the inverted triangle indicates a response. So what we're trying to do with this marking is indicate the give and take nature of the discussion. We continue on the side reading She'elas Rava. Rava raises a question. Tashmish Hamita, intimacy. Lefiha Rabbonan, according to the Rabbonan, and this is the Rabbonan as opposed to Rabbi Yossi, who we saw featured before. We want to know, according to the Rabbonan, Hayim ze begeder inui nefesh, oidvorim shebeinoi leveina. Under which category of vows does Tashmish Hamita appear? The Gemara. Bo'amine Ravim Rav Nachman. Tashmish Hamita le Rabbonan. Inui nefeshu oidvorim shebeinoi leveina. Omar le, tenisua. So Rav Nachman responds, says, based on the following Tanaic source, a Mishnah, later on in our Perek, you should be able to reach an answer. And you'll notice that this is a long answer. So what does he say? The Mishnah later on says, Unatula ani min hayehudim, a woman who vows using that expression. You see in the Rashi, Omeres netuah min hayehudim, moderes ani mehem mitashmish. Shum Yehudi Mimena. She vows that no Jew shall benefit from her intimacy. So essentially she's vowing to prohibit anyone from having intimacy with her. And we're dealing with a married woman. The Gemara continues at the top of Daf Pei Beis, Yofer Chelkoi. So the Mishnah says that the husband is to annul his own portion, so to speak, in that vow, U'mishamashto, and with the annulment he can have intimacy with her. She'll be permitted to him. U'tei netula min hayehudim. And she'll remain prohibited in the event that she gets divorced, she'll be prohibited to anyone else. Ve'i amris neder inui nefesh havi. If you were to think that tashmish hamita, which is reflected in this expression of netula min hayehudim, is in the category of inui nefesh, amai tehe netula min hayehudim. Why does the Mishnah indicate that upon a divorce she'll be prohibited to everyone else? Is it not so that that one who annuls an inui nefesh type vow, the annulment is applicable, is binding, is effective, even with regard to others? Shma mino dvorim shebeino leveino havyon. So from studying our Mishnah, the Mishnah later on, we see that Tashmish is in the realm of Beino Leveino. The Gemara rejects this, and it answers, it says, L'rabbonon tiboyoloch mishum dinutulo ani minayudim rabiosi kotoni lo. The question that we asked was very focused. It was a question according to the Rabbonon. And citing this Mishnah of Netula Ani Min Hayehudim does not help us in concluding the question. Why? Because the Mishnah that in which this is featured, Netula Min Hayehudim, this is a Mishnah that's taught by Rav Yossi. De Amar Rav Huna, Kulei Pirkin Rav Yossi Hi. Rav Huna informs us that this entire Perek is the teaching of Rav Yossi. Mimai, how does Rav Huna know that? Kevon dekotani, it says in the Mishnah that you'll find at the top of Ayin Tesomid Beis, it says there, Rav Yossi Omer Ein Elu Nidre Inui Nefesh. As you continue reading in the Mishnah, Loma Le Su Lemisna, why? As you continue reading in the Mishnah, is there any need for the following to be said? Hareze Yofer Divrei Rav Yossi. The Mishnah goes on to say that the husband shall annul the vows. This is Rav Yossi's teaching. But we knew it was Rav Yossi We knew Rabbi Yossi was the speaker from the fact that he had appeared earlier in the Mishnah. It was one continuous teaching of Rabbi Yossi. Is it not redundant for the Mishnah to say, again, Divrei Rabbi Yossi? So from this seemingly extraneous expression, Shma Mino Mikan V'Elech Rabbi Yossi, that from this point on, in the Perek, including the Mishnah of Netula Ani Min HaYehudin, this is all Rabbi Yossi's teaching. And hence our question raised more at the bottom of Pei Aleph and Beis, what is the Shita of the Rabbonon regarding Tashish Hamita? That remains unresolved. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.